Thousands of people died during the Civil War. How haunted is Gettysburg? In a moment, Rich Newman joins us with his latest work, Ghosts of the Civil War, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Rich Newman with us, author and filmmaker living in Memphis, Tennessee, a lifelong enthusiast of the paranormal, and his group Paranormal Inc. has been involved with research and investigations for more than a decade, as articles have appeared in Haunted Times and Paranormal Underground. Noted author, some of his books include Devil in the Delta, Haunted Bridges, Ghost Hunting for Beginners, Ghost Hunter's Field Guide, and Ghosts of the Civil War. And in the not-too-distant future, probably in the summertime, another book will be out called The Disembodied. Rich, welcome back. Good to have you.
Hey, George. Happy New Year.
You too. You too. Did it start off well for you?
Oh, of course. We've had, you know, kind of a mellow, warm southern winter, so everything's been great here.
I left St. Louis Saturday morning right after the Friday night show. They got pelted with, it was snowing when I was leaving. I didn't think I was going to get out of there, but they got pelted with 12 inches of snow.
It was like the snowpocalypse up there. You're lucky you got out.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't think I had to get over to Denver to do our Beyond Belief TV shows. And I didn't think I was going to make it. But the grace of God, I got out of there.
Thank goodness. Yeah, it was terrible up there.
Ghosts of the Civil War. I've always wanted to talk about this situation. Tell me a little bit about this.
Well, we're talking about, you know, the most deadly war in American history with, you know, at low number, 620,000 dead. But now we have new research coming out that suggests that maybe even up to 850,000 people died in this war.
Oh, my God.
That's more than every other war combined.
I mean, we lost, sadly, 50,000-plus men and women, soldiers in Vietnam. That's a horrible tragedy. But can you imagine 800,000?
It's crazy. I mean, even World War II, we had 405,000 or so. And, you know, if it is 850,000, that's more than twice as much. It's crazy.
Jeez. No wonder the place is haunted.
Exactly.
So when you put together the book, tell me the angle that you took.
Well, I really wanted to, you know, a lot of the people who go out and ghost hunt, and even the Civil War buffs, you know, they really know a lot about the major, major places, like, you know, like you mentioned Gettysburg. I really wanted to have a place where you could go and see even, like, the smaller things, like, you know, where you had these little small clashes all over the South especially, and in the East. And then you had, you know, more places that with hauntings, you know, family homes, you know, you had a lot of loved ones who went away to serve and they left behind families, and sometimes they didn't come back. And that, you know, that left, you know, grief and everything in those houses. So you have so many homes that are associated with, you know, people who were officers in the Civil War and families who were left behind and that kind of thing. And then you even have homes, you know, they were absconded, you know, to become like makeshift field hospitals and things like that. So I really wanted to kind of touch on all these different layers, you know, your big battlefield, your small clashes, all the way down to individual homes.
Yeah, you looked at about 160 locations, didn't you?
Oh, my gosh. It's crazy. I legitimately think that every single place that's involved in the Civil War has a ghost story. So, hundreds of places.
Did you feel the apparitions when you were out there?
You feel, when you go to some of these battlefields, you really do feel the weight of everything that happened there. Besides the weight of history, just walking, you know, in a place like Devil's Den and Gettysburg, or, you know, across the cherry orchards at Shiloh, when you look around and you think, you know, there were thousands of people lying dead here. It's hard to even fathom, even when you're standing there, but absolutely, I think you feel the weight of it all.
Let's talk about the cases that you came across, and how did you find them, Rich?
Well, thankfully, you know, us ghost hunters, we have quite a lengthy network out there. So, you know, we have great ghost hunting groups all over the country. So I used them. You know, I reached out to a lot of different groups and said, you know, you live in Virginia. Tell me about some of your local haunts there. And I'd get firsthand accounts from people. And then I kind of went around and looked at some of the work other people did. A lot of these Civil War parks and things are really open with discussing the paranormal things that happen there now. And even some even go so far as to offer ghost tours. So I reached out directly to as many different places as I could. Now, where it got kind of tough was getting down to, like, you know, some of these smaller cemeteries and things like mm-hmm. that. But, you know, I just got out there and beat the bushes and, you know, talked to people.
Any particular story that you can relay to us?
Oh, my gosh, not so many. I'll tell you one of my favorites. I mean, I love the, you know, the Battle of Chickamauga was the second deadliest battle of the war. And they have this ongoing tale to this day that there was this sort of primordial creature. They call him Green Eyes. And he would wander the battlefields. There were so many dead people that they literally believe that it just brought forth this horrible, like, demonic thing that was out there to feast on the dead.
Oh, geez.
And to this day, you have people, you know, that go to Chickamauga and they catch glimpses of something with green eyes looking from the woods. They hear the sounds of, like, panting of a beast, things that touch them. And so there's a little bit of debate about whether or not it's an actual creature or more like a ghost or an evil spirit. But, you know, that to me is one of the great tales.
What would this creature do? Just wander around the battle sites?
Well, I think it's one of these sort of variations on the theme of a revenant that's, you know, something that's sort of drawn by the dead. And because, I guess, just so much, you know, death happened at this particular battle that this creature's still sticking around the area. Chickamauga had over 34,000 casualties. So, I mean, that's a lot of dead to be piled in one little small Georgia Civil War park.
Other than the green eyes, has anybody described what this thing might look like?
Yeah, that's where kind of where the interesting stories come in, because you have, you know, people who just see the eyes kind of believe it's more like a spirit, and they're just seeing the eyes of the spirit sort of roaming the grounds. But there have been people who claim more that it's more something along the line of a cryptid, Bigfoot type of a creature. The only thing I'd say to that is obviously it'd be a pretty long-lived creature to be sticking around, you know, since 1862. But, yeah, there's absolutely been people who said that they've seen sort of what looked like a hairy, walking on two legs, a type of a Bigfoot style of a creature.
What's going on in the world of paranormal investigations these days, Rich? Do you go there, for example, with a team, or you do this by yourself?
I usually do it by myself. I do have a couple guys that go with me on occasion. I've been touring a lot, actually, with Fuji TV. I'm shooting a show for Japanese television. So I've actually been getting some interesting perspective working with these guys and seeing, you know, what American haunts kind of look like, you know, through Eastern eyes. And it's really been pretty interesting. You know, the Japanese take the supernatural very seriously.
They sure do. They sure
and, do. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, when we're somewhere and we're shooting, and then, you know, when stuff starts happening, you just see, you know, their eyes get big, you know, and they kind of look around the room, and everything just kind of gets, you know, a little more exciting. And, you know, this cool little balance that the Japanese have between the supernatural and also kind of the relationship they still have with their family after they're dead and the respect for those that pass away is really cool.
Do you think because of what they went through in World War II, the two nuclear bombs that hit them in Hiroshima and Nagasaki may have gotten them to be as serious as they are about the paranormal?
I think that's definitely a huge impact, you know, for today's Japanese people. There are a lot of ghost stories still associated with those areas. And because of the a lot of the older generations, especially in that period, you know, had a religion called Shinto, where they erect shrines where they can actually still speak to the, you know, deceased loved ones and relatives and seek guidance from them. And, man, you know, when those bombs took out as many people as they did and put as much damage as it did, and even just the families that were just hurt by being, you know, relocated to get away from that stuff. Yeah, I mean, they're still feeling that, you know, with the youngest generations today, especially those who practice Shinto and still, you know, sort of follow those beliefs.
What is it about some folks who just like to be scared and haunted? You know, they go on ghost hunts, they, you know, go to ghost hotels. Why do they like to be scared so much?
Well, I'm going to have to profess that I'm one of these guys. So.
Yep. Oh, I knew you were. It's in your blood.
Well, you know, I think it's the same thing, the reason that we like horror movies, and the same reason that, you know, it's a lot of people, I think, they feel the most alive when they're sort of experiencing, you know, that little taste of death, you know, whether it's, you know, through ghosts or through fiction or through horror stories. You know, there's that thrill of, you know, I'm alive, they're dead. But also, I think it's, you know, that thrill, too, of wanting to believe in something in the afterlife. And getting, you know, when you start having real experiences, it bolsters, you know, your opinion that there's something when we die, that we have a ghost, that we have a spirit, we're moving on. And that can really be, you know, invigorating for a lot of people.
Do you have any doubts about the other side?
None now. I can definitely say, you know, I was, you know, when I wrote the first book on ghosts and things, I was kind of a fence sitter. And, you know, I always thought, you know, if I have some experiences, you know, I'll look at them objectively and that sort of thing. After the books that I've written and the places I've been, I've had so many experiences. I've been touched by ghosts. I've heard ghosts. I've been in a room talking to a group and a woman just start laughing in the middle of us. I've seen things, felt things, you know, all these things. So, no, I have no doubt. But at the same time, I also understand when someone tells me that they're a skeptic and, you know, they want to wait and see for themselves kind of a situation. And I always tell them, you know, the skeptic, you're just one experience away, you know, from being just like me.
There seems to be a trend toward the paranormal. Do you feel that?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually kind of liking, you know, where the paranormal sort of scene is going right now because, you know, about 5-6 years ago, we had so many these ghost shows on TV. We had so many sort of popularization
yep.
of ghosts and ghost hunting that it was sort of being shoved into kind of this trivial realm where it was becoming just a pop culture sort of a situation. And I think that's mostly died. I think right now, you know, we've been left with the ones who sort of survived all that, and they're the ones who are more serious about approaching the subject and looking more at scientific method and things we can do to actually, you know, help people understand, you know, how the human soul works and why maybe some of these people are sticking around.
How does the media handle this, Rich? How do they handle you?
You know, I think it's gotten better. I think it was really sort of popularized, and these producers would love to get their hands on some young ghost hunters and sort of have them, you know, make things scarier than they were, and, you know, and they want to look like, you know, like they're
yeah.
these tough dudes in their black T-shirts posing. And I think now we've gotten to a good place where we can really sit back and kind of look at the history of places and how that's associated with the ghosts and the stories and take a more serious approach.
The fact that you have been a ghost hunter for all these years and, you know, you've done some work on television as well, do you think you get a pass when it comes to, you know, the ghosts and the apparitions, that they will still hang around as long as you're around?
You know, I think a lot of times when we're in a place that, you know, has what we call an intelligent haunting, where the ghost does seem to be sort of keyed into what's happening in the present. I do think that when someone is sort of paying attention to them, they pay attention back. So I don't think there's anything special about me that I'm getting a pass, but I think that maybe just because I've been to a lot more haunted places than others, that maybe I notice that they've noticed. And I think that others can do the same thing. I think if they go in with an open mind and sort of reach out, you know, so to speak, to the ghost, I'd be surprised, you know, some of the reactions and activity they'll get.
What are some of your favorite ghost stories?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, I always like the really ambiguous stuff. You know, like, I love when, you know, when I was on the show talking to you about another book, Haunted Bridges, like we talked about, you know, in Ojai, California.
I love that show, by the way. That was fun.
Oh, man, thank you. Well, that, you know, there's a bridge out there in Ojai. And they have these entities out there, and you're not sure if they're ghosts or they're these horrible demonic things. And then you've even got people out there saying that there's this tomb in the woods, and that in the 1800s there's actually a vampire there. So you have these stories of vampires, demons, ghosts, phantom hitchhikers walking down the road. Man, when I just see that much activity coming out of one spot, you know, I want to go there. I want to see what's happening, you know, and find out for myself.
I don't blame you at all. You know, getting back to some of the ghost TV shows, one of my pet peeves with it, they always seem to have a climatic ending. And it doesn't happen that way all the time, but they force feed it. It's Hollywood, right?
Oh, well, of course it is. I mean, anytime, you know, you get a group of producers in a room, and, you know, I'm sure your producers on the show are great, so I'm not talking about them.
No, they're good people.
Yeah, you get producers in the room, you know, and, you know, they want to have a good show. So they're going to be sort of, you know, coaxing things along. And, you know, I'm sure there's varying degrees of that, but, yeah, it's for sure there.
They don't want to end a program and say nothing happened.
Exactly. You know, or, you know, unless there's some way that they could dramatically disprove it, I suppose, and make the people in the spot, you know, look like they're, you know, liars or something, which I also disapprove of. You know, because it's always been amazing to me that someone can live in a home, you know, for generations, and they're there every single day, and you know, they know every tick of the wood. You know, in your own house, every distort, you know, the stairs that creak, you know, the things outside that bump when it's windy, all these sounds and things. And then you're going to have some ghost hunters come in there and spend 2 hours and then walk out and go, well, we didn't hear anything. You're not haunted. And, you know, that gets me, you know, just as much as the other thing.
Yeah, watch my show, nothing happened.
Exactly.
What do you think of electronic voice phenomena?
Oh, I'm very much into it. I mean, I don't think there's any magic to it. It's kind of funny, you know, subject in that. I think a lot of people used to believe there was some sort of, you know, hocus-pocus kind of thing going on, you know, that you turn on this microphone on your recorder and voices would magically appear. But I really think it's as basic as, you know, as we get older, our ears get worse. And the ears, so to speak, on these microphones, on these recorders, are just so much better than our ears that it just picks up the things that we miss. And I think 9 times out of 10, the voices that we're capturing on the recorders, you know, had we, you know, been a, you know, strapping 14-year-old with the best ears in the world, we might have actually, you know, heard these sounds, you know, in real time. And sometimes we do get those disembodied voices. So, yeah, I love EVP because, you know, just having that aid of the microphone and the speakers on those little recorders can, you know, capture so much that, you know, we would otherwise miss.
The little voice of kids, ghostly kids, freaks me out.
Oh, you and everybody, man.
Yeah, I don't know why, but it does.
I think it's a combination of the spookiness, but also the sadness of it, you know, because when you know.
Of losing a little kid.
Yeah, well, any sane person, you know, is going to be sad at the idea of a small child being killed or, you know, dying young and that sort of thing, so. Oh, you're right, though. I mean, yeah, there is nothing creepier than hearing, you know, a kid, even when a kid, like, laughs.
Yeah.
If you're in an empty room and you hear the laugh, it sounds spooky.
That's exactly right. Well, stay with us, Rich. We're going to come back in a moment and continue chatting about some of your work. Ghosts of the Civil War. He's got one coming out in the summer called The Disembodied, so I'm sure we'll have him back for that as well. Next hour, we will take your stories and questions. For Rich Newman, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with Rich Newman. His latest book is called Ghosts of the Civil War in the Summertime. Disembodied was coming out. Give us a little highlight, Rich, on what that will be about.
It's actually about a property in Missouri that spans 3 generations from 2 different families that's all had paranormal events happen at this one particular place.
What city, do you know? Of course you know.
It's outside of a small town called Marston.
Oh yeah,
in Southeast Missouri.
Okay, interesting.
And it was a really small Pentecostal community back in the 20s and 30s. And as we sort of been digging into the story, there was just a lot of shady, I don't want to say murders, but a lot of shady deaths that were happening and a lot of residual things left behind. But the houses that ended up in this one particular spot ended up becoming extremely haunted. And so we've been getting a lot of interesting stories about that.
It's not a well-known story, so you're going to probably bring it to the forefront.
Absolutely. Which, I, you know, a good ghost story is one of my favorite things on the planet. So I've had a blast working with the people out there and getting their stories down. And we had a 92-year-old man who actually kept this sort of makeshift diary when he was living there working on a farm. And, man, it's just some of the stories out of there are hair-raising.
I love it. What is, for you, one of the most harrowing ghost stories that you've come across?
I would say probably a lot of the ones that we know the most are maybe the cases associated with maybe the Warrens, because a lot of the work they did sort of bridged the gap between ghosts and demonic entities.
Right. Boy, they were into it in a big way, too, weren't they?
Oh, man, you are. Ed Warden was all over that stuff. I actually had the pleasure to meet him before he passed away, and what a genteel fella he was. He absolutely 100% was into it, and Lorraine is still kicking, thank goodness, and, you know, same way. But some of those cases they did, like, you know, the ones that ended up becoming books, like The Devil in Connecticut and In a Dark Place, they really go to some dark places and how they, you know, the people there had children and how they would experience these sort of combinations of ghost story activities, but also these sort of possessions and sort of demonic things happening there. And I find that terribly frightening.
I think Lorraine is in her 90s, isn't she?
She is, and she's still out there running. You know, they've got the Warrens, they've got their own little sort of a mini museum going on at their house. And she, from what I understand, if you go out there to the museum, you have a good chance of running into Lorraine. She's still kicking. She's still, you know, fielding producers. I think they've got a, you know, what is it, a third Conjuring movie coming out that's about the Lorraines. And so she's, you know, yeah, thank goodness she's still kicking.
They are one of a kind, aren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, they're a dying breed. And, you know, and it was really cool. You know, they found their own sort of niche to get in there and, you know, being diehard Catholics, they sort of have a unique viewpoint on, you know, how they approach ghosts and deal with the other supernatural elements. You know, there's always been a little bit of debate about how much of it was ghosts and how much of it was some otherworldly beings. But, you know, to me, potato, potato, you know, they're great researchers. And I love watching and reading the stuff they do.
So many people experience, Rich, so many different kinds of hauntings and ghost stories, and some of them are pretty darn demonic. Where does that come from, the demonic side of it?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on your religious viewpoints. I think any time that you have a negative spirit at all, there can be a little bit of debate about, you know, is this just a bad person and his ghost is sticking around? Because certainly we've seen that, you know, if you're a bad person in life and you're abusive and, you know, you're a murderer and you're this horrible person, you die. Well, I mean, now you're not going to be this, you know, happy-go-lucky ghost. You're going to be the same horrible person that you were in life. So
you would think so, at least.
Well, absolutely. And so, I mean, you know, I do think a lot of times that it's just, you know, a negative spirit. It's a, you know, it was a bad person when he's alive and he's a bad person when he's dead. But there does seem, you know, to be these sort of preternatural spirits that, you know, were never once human. So whether we want to call those, you know, demons, you know, I believe in Islam they call them jinn, and you have different belief systems in the East that sort of come down to being sort of the same thing as demons. And, you know, it all comes down to being spirits that were never once people. And it does seem that there are cases where, you know, people run into these things. And, you know, once again, you know, the potato, potato. I mean, we call them, you know, what our belief system, you know, says they are. And, but, yeah, I absolutely think they're out there.
A lot of our guests recently have been talking about the fact that they do not believe there is a hell, Rich. Where do you stand with that?
Oh, man, I wish I had the answer to that, George. I would write a hell of a book on that. I would not want to put my finger on any sort of theory involving the afterlife other than I think there's something. And, you know, I find comfort even just in that statement because I think that any of us would take something over oblivion. And, you know, I think that's where this ghost hunting thing comes into play, being so important to people, because having experiences that show you, you know, something's here. There is something, you know, that we have a soul, and some of them are sticking around for some reason. You know, for me, that's a huge comfort. And I think for a lot of people, too, the ideas of heaven and hell, whether they're the disposition of karma or, you know, the way a person was when they die and they create their own heaven or hell, or whether it's, you know, an actual place, a plane of existence that is, you know, grounded in religion. You know, I'd love to know the answers to that myself. If you find out, please let me know.
Do you think these demons can actually harm a human being physically?
Absolutely.
Wow.
I mean, if something can pick up a, you know, coffee cup and throw it across the room and hit someone with it, then they can hurt them. I think that's always been one of those things that a lot of ghost hunters are shy about saying. You know, the ghosts are harmless. You don't have to be afraid in the house. And I would say that 99% of the time, that's probably an accurate assessment. Most ghosts seem like they just want to be noticed. You know, I'm still here. You know, look at me. You know, give me some attention kind of thing. But then you have that 1%, like we just said, you know, a bad person makes a bad spirit. You have people saying they get shoved as they're going downstairs. You have people that have, you know, one of the big documentaries, you know, I think it was Zach Bagans, did, where you could see a brick fly across the room. You know, if that hits somebody, it's going to hurt them. So, absolutely. I mean, if you have ugly spirits doing ugly things, absolutely they can hurt you.
Hmm. And how do you cleanse yourself to keep them away?
You know, I personally don't. I've never had the need to do that. I've only ran into, you know, some scary things. I genuinely don't get frightened when ghost things happen, even when it appears that they're sort of malevolent. You know, it's, you know, like if the kid on the playground, you know, threw a haymaker at me and he missed, you know, I wouldn't run off. It's the same thing with a ghost. I mean, I get excited when things start happening, you know, and I see people get frightened and I feel like they need, you know, to do something. And I sort of buy into the idea of burning sage and appeasing the spirits in a sense, because it does seem like, you know, when we do leave some people that have haunted homes and they want to feel better in their home, that's usually where we turn, is either something like burning sage, or if they're religious, of course, bringing in their clergy. But for me personally, I've never really had the need to do it, thankfully.
Well, good for you. Rich Newman with us. Website, of course, paranormalincorporated.com. Is that correct, Rich?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. When you go ghost hunting, do you bring equipment with you?
I do, because personally, my goal is to capture some sort of evidence. And I do that not just, you know, to put a video on our website or something like that. I think that a lot of times when a family's experiencing a haunting, the big thing they want is for people to believe them. And if I can capture something on an audio recorder, something on a video recorder or a camera, collect some data, you know, like rooms dropping 25 degrees in the space of 10 minutes or something, I can give them quantifiable, you know, things that they can show other people and say, well, you don't believe this? Well, look at this. And to me, that's really where ghost hunters can provide a great service. I don't really buy into ghost hunters that tout, oh, we're going to get rid of your ghosts. You know, this isn't Ghostbusters, you know.
And spread sage all over the house, right?
Yeah. If ghost doesn't want to leave, how are you going to make a ghost leave? If it doesn't want to leave, it's not going anywhere.
What if you evoke the name of Jesus? Does that work?
I believe it can work, especially if it's an intelligent ghost and the name of Jesus carried weight with that ghost. Absolutely. But what if the ghost is, say, you know, Muslim, and you said that it might have no effect whatsoever to them, because for them, they, you know, it wouldn't carry any weight. So I think a lot of times, you know, learning what the ghost is or who the ghost was, and learning more about the family who lived there is a great way to sort of tap into their psyche and figure out what you could do to get that one ghost to move on.
Rich, share with us a story from the Civil War that made it to the book, Ghosts of the Civil War.
Well, I always love to talk about the story of Saxbridge at Gettysburg. You know, we have a situation where three Confederate soldiers were attempting to abandon their duty and run off, and they were captured. They were dutifully hauled back to the bridge and hung. And, you know, this is a historical fact. And since then, we have seen, oh my gosh, so many people have gone to Saxbridge and felt, you know, the temperature in the air change around them. They've actually thought they ran into what felt like legs hanging from the rafters hitting them. You have people see full-bodied apparitions hanging from the rafters, voices. Even so far as to reenact the actual moment they died, you would hear gunshots and people yelling and screaming and that sort of thing. And Saxbridge is really cool because it's right there in the battlefield outside. So any person that wants to do this can go to Gettysburg, walk right out there and check that bridge out for themselves.
Have you been at Gettysburg when you saw something weird and bizarre happen up front?
I didn't see anything myself at Saxbridge, but I did have an experience when we were at Devil's Den that we actually started to hear what sounded like cannon fire. And I actually thought, oh, man, there must be some sort of reenactment happening out here because it was so clear coming from the woods. And by the time that we got back up to the little place, you know, the museum where you can go in and look at the different artifacts and things, one of the park rangers was standing there, and I said, yeah, I got kind of worried because of the, you know, I was getting freaked out thinking that we were seeing ghosts out there because I heard the cannons, and he was like, there's no cannons going on out there. I was like, oh, my gosh, because that really also stood out to me, like, you know, are people hearing this stuff that crystal clear? Then, oh, my goodness, it's, yeah, I don't know that I want to hear people screaming on the battlefield because it was just such a clear event.
You've heard of the case of the Dyatlov Pass incident, right?
I've heard of it, but off the top of my head, I don't remember the details.
It was in the Ural Mountains in the Soviet Union back in 1959. A number of campers were out there, and
Okay. They
all died, all of them, under very bizarre and unusual circumstances. And people still to this day don't know what happens. It looks like that they were trying to get out of their tents, not run into them, but to get out of them. There were just scratch marks and indications that showed that something was in their tent and they had to get out. Strange story.
That is really odd. It almost makes you think it's more along the lines of a creature sort of situation.
Yeah, it does. A ghostly creature.
I'll definitely need to read up on that, though. That sounds neat.
Yeah, Dyatlov Pass, it's called, up there in northern Russia. So what's your next project after Disembodied?
Well, I'm in the midst of talking with a couple of different production companies about doing a history show that would talk about like the history and ghosts of different places around the country, focusing a lot on the Civil War and other places. So I'm really hoping that's going to come together and we'll get to kick off something like that. But if not, I actually want to do something that involves hauntings around the world versus the United States, since I've kind of covered that subject. And I hope to do some more things with Japanese because I really find their ideas of the spirit world and how ghosts work and things extremely fascinating. So I'll probably get into something like that.
And the evolution of paranormal, how do you see it over the last few years? Is there a higher interest or is it going down?
I think it's a higher interest, and I think it's people who are legitimately interested in the science stuff of it because...
And you need more of that.
We do need more of that. I mean, I think we just had, you're probably more familiar with the story than me, but I think there was a professor out of either Arizona or New Mexico who's in the midst of trying to prove the existence of a soul through quantum physics.
Yes.
And that kind of stuff, I mean, I love to hear that because these are the things that we really want to know about. You know, what is this process of our soul and how it moves between, you know, this plane of existence and the next plane of existence, and how do some become ghosts? Because, I mean, clearly, if every single person who died became a ghost, every place on the planet would be haunted. So, I love to see that we have more people coming out with a science-minded sort of attitude, and that we're really making effort, you know, to learn more about the afterlife.
All right, stay with us, Rich. We're going to come back at the top of the hour, fast night, and take phone calls with you as we talk about Ghosts of the Civil War, exploring the paranormal history of America's deadliest war. And again, Rich has other books out there too, including The Ghost Hunter's Field Guide. That's kind of neat. Ghost Hunter for Beginners. How about Haunted Bridges? We talked about that back in October of 2017. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with your calls next.